And it's April 21st, and this is Errol Strider. And we are broadcasting the show Insight Out, the Naked Truth, coming to you live from Lupin Lodge in the Los Gatos Hills of California, where clothing is optional. Mm-hmm. But the truth is always naked. And I am Errol Strider.
And I am Rochelle Alicia Strider. And we welcome you to our home at Lupin Lodge. We invited you over tonight for some conversation, a few laughs, several spiritual perspectives, and as many surprises as possible. One of them has probably been you hearing a half hour of an old show. Now we're back.
We're back live.
Because we had some technical difficulties. And tonight's show is called What's the Catch? Which means it's very appropriate. The catch was we had a glitch.
What's the catch?
We just want you to know that tonight's show is sponsored by Goat Raw. 100% raw food that not only tastes good, but is good for you.
And Goat Raw can be found at Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, the organic section of Costco. So go to goraw.com. Find out where you can find Goat Raw products in your neighborhood.
And if you want now, you can call in live because we are coming to you live. So if you want to say something like, what happened? I thought I was having a deja vu. Well,
a deja vu. That's when you're from the Ozarks. You said, did y'all have a deja vu? And Rochelle said, yeah, we have deja. Yeah, right.
We only have deja vu on Tuesdays. The other days we have something else. But if you feel too shy, we'll understand.
But we need to cover some ground here because The Catch is our sponsor tonight, right? As I said to our email list, seems like there's always a catch, doesn't it? So what is The Catch? And its subsidiaries, Catch Up, Catch Me If You Can, and Did You Catch That? There's lots of stuff going on about catching. Colds are catching. Catch the ball, of course, is the beginning, I assume, of the metaphor. But Rochelle and I, along with the ground of being, will be here tonight to catch you if and when you stumble. And if you're ahead of us, we'll do our best to catch up. So expect, as Rochelle says, some surprises. And you can listen to all of our shows anytime if you go to this website, www.bbsradio.com.
How many BBs did you have in that one?
I had four, but there's only three.
But there's only two.
BB. Yeah, two there is.
BBS.
I was thinking of the W's. I got mixed up. I was thinking, well, there's three W's. Oh, but it was B's.
BBS.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Anyway. So anyway, you kind of catch my drift, Rochelle, where we're headed?
I catch your drift. I'm always catching something from you.
Right.
I caught two babies from you once.
Wait. I caught the babies. You just delivered them.
Well, no, but I caught them originally.
Well, I don't know if that's as much as how I'd see it, but I like the premise of it.
Okay.
Yeah, because what interests me about this title, and today I went through a number of titles that I've come up with, and this one just jumped out at me because I was thinking of, you know, what is the catch? And what would be the reason why you would even ask the question, what is the catch?
Well, it seems to me like a catch in this particular sentence or in this particular usage of the word is like there's something that you're going to have to pay for. What's the catch?
It's kind of like too good to be true, isn't it?
It's too good to be true, and you know, what do I have to pay? What do I have to give up? It's something you have to give up. It connotes a sort of negativity, what's the catch?
First,
people don't say that when it's exciting and happy. We're all happy.
Yeah, we don't go, oh, wow, what's the catch? No, it just doesn't work.
No.
It's like very cynical.
Okay, what's the catch?
Yeah.
It's cynical.
Well, that's so interesting. But I wanted to look at...
How do you want to look at it?
There's the catch 22.
Never understood what the catch 21 was.
We're going to talk about catch 21, 19, and 12. But before, I just thought it would be worthwhile to see if you understand catch 22. We're going to explain it.
Okay, thank you.
We're going to go right to the source. Here we go.
I've flown 35 missions for Christ's
sake.
Now that sadistic nut has raised the number up to 50. In any other outfit, I would have been rotated after 25. Doc, you've got to help me out.
Look, I'm due for rotation myself in a couple of months if I don't cause any trouble or break any rules. And one of the rules says I can't ground anyone just because he asked.
Can you ground somebody who's crazy?
Of course, I have to. There's a rule that says I have to ground anyone who's crazy.
I'm crazy.
Who says so?
Ask anybody. Ask Daily, Dodd, what? Hey, Orr. Orr, tell him.
Tell him what?
Am I crazy?
He's crazy, Doc. He won't fly with me. I take good care of him.
You can't let crazy people decide whether you're crazy or not, can you?
He's not crazy.
Of course he is. He has to be crazy to keep flying after all the close calls he's had.
Then why can't you ground him?
I can, but first he has to ask me.
That's all he's got to do to be grounded?
That's all.
And then you can ground him?
No, then I cannot ground him. There's a catch.
Well, that's the evening. The catch of this evening is that if you get interested in something and you're ready to have it happen,
right,
it's going to blow out on you.
Well, it catches on something. You know, like your dress catches on a Miss Technical
kind of
thing.
Well, you tell us in your own words and forget about it. What's his name. What was that guy?
That was from the movie Catch 22, where it is actually explained. Let me come back to that because his explanation is a lot better than mine. But to me, we've been talking a lot about resistance and non-resistance, and that to me is where the catch always is. And expectation. Remember last week we talked about projection and assumptions and all of that? Well, expectation comes right out of that. So if you have an expectation for something like, oh, I want that. Oh, that sounds so good.
No, the expectation is that you'll get it. It's not an expectation. The expectation is you're going to get that thing that tastes so good. That's what gets you angry when you don't get it.
Uh-huh.
Because what you're doing is you're creating a wish. That's not an expectation. A wish doesn't know if you'll get it or not.
That's right.
Hope you get it. But right. An expectation is you want that and you expect to have it. You expect that somebody will treat you nicely. You expect that somebody will listen to you when you talk.
I expect that Skype will start when we start the radio program.
Exactly. That's an expectation. You expect something to happen. When it doesn't happen, you get pissed.
Right.
For the most part. Until you've achieved a certain mastery over your feelings. And then what you do is you go, aha, that didn't happen. So here I am. What is happening? Oh, here I am. But we don't get there that quickly.
We don't get there that quickly because we're kind of slow on the uptake.
The catch 22 in this sense is we're human. And the catch 22 is we have to deal with all the things that humans deal with, which is all the stuff we talk about on a radio show, expectations, perceptions, projections, you know, all these things.
Well, this is from the movie Catch 22, and I think we can come in at a good time. It was with Alan Arkin and the other guy. And he's explaining what the catch 22 is right here.
Okay. Everybody listen.
A catch. Sure, catch 22. Anyone who wants to get out of combat isn't really crazy, so I can't ground him. Okay. Let me see if I got this straight. In order to be grounded, I've got to be crazy. And I must be crazy to keep flying. But if I ask to be grounded, that means I'm not crazy anymore and I have to keep flying.
You've got it. That's catch 22. Woo!
I think I didn't understand it completely then, and I think I don't completely understand it now either.
I think I agree. I was listening to, I'm waiting for comprehension to just kind of come in there and take charge. But it just waited outside on the wings there.
I guess the catch 22 is if you want this and you do this to think that you'll get it, it takes you away from this.
It's another way of saying you can't get there from here.
That's a good one, too. You can't get there from here. Can you get there from?
First of all, you have to figure out where here is. You know,
right.
Here, to me, the can't get there from here has to do with the nature of getting from the finite into the infinite, because you can't get there from here. For one thing, you're already there. You're already in the infinite.
Your finite mind can't grok that.
Cannot grok it. Can't go there. Have to leave it behind. And it's going, don't leave me behind. I've been in charge all this time. And, of course, the finite mind can't be in charge when it goes there in the infinite. And that's because the finite mind is controlled by this need, this compulsion, the spasm, if you will. Thomas Merton called the ego is the spasm. It's this spasm, which is like this desire to have it be a certain way and then tension of resisting the way it is. And then it builds a whole personality complex around this thing, which is really, really amazing. It builds this whole thing, and we call it the ego. And I wrote an ode to the ego, and I would like to play it for you now. It's called The Hour of Humiliation. No, I didn't play this on Easter.
No?
No.
Okay.
But I could have, because it talks about the thorny wreaths, and it's, you know, it references that. But no, I didn't play it on Easter.
Oh.
Remember?
You played it for me just recently, that's why.
That's right.
I think the only time you play music for me is when we're doing this radio show.
Is that it?
I guess that's what was.
Well, here's the ode to the ego. Check it out.
The Hour of Humiliation. The ego, standing up and preening, strutting around the stage, in the mind, waiting for laughs and applause, like a comedian, the fool, parading itself before spirited morticians, not understanding the need to be humbled, to be the fool, with no applause, just whips and scourging and thorny wreaths round his head. Smugly self-deceived, basking in feebled acclaim, jaundiced reviews wending their way into oblivion. An ignominious performance, attended only by critics and jaded pedestrians who stop long enough to gape and spit. A defrocked, defunct comic, foolishly curled up on the empty stage floor, with only the light of a rehearsal bulb throwing his tears in shadows. The ego, a disrumpled has-been, sobbing on the splintered performance place, with echoes of canned laughter scorching his brain.
Spirited morticians. I like that metaphor. I noticed I wrote this poem many years ago, but I continue to live it. With echoes of canned laughter scorching, I like the image of only the rehearsal bulb throwing his tears in shadows.
Yeah, those rehearsal bulbs were bare light overhead.
Right.
Create ghoulish forms on one's face sometimes.
Well, that's kind of what the ego is. It reminds me of, speaking of ghoulish forms in one's face, and the ego, the book, The Picture of Dorian Gray, and of course it was a movie. It was Oscar Wilde, wasn't mm-hmm. it? For those of you who don't know the story, he has a painting that, how does it go?
Well, someone does a portrait of him.
Right.
He seems to be young forever. And everyone always, you know, people around him are getting older, but his face is like that of a youth almost. What happens is that the painting is the thing that's gotten older and reflects the evilness of him. He wasn't a nice person at all. He was horrible.
That's right.
And he did horrible things, and he constantly got away with it. But the painting depicts this monster. It's like the physical manifestation of all the horrible things he did in his life. And I think he dies at the end, and then they see his face becomes the painting, and painting becomes the young man again.
Yeah, it's very profound.
It's very profound. It's definitely worth reading. All the movies they did of it, I think they did two. They spent a lot of time on the theatrics of it. And even though Oscar Wilde was a very theatrical writer, all the stuff that went underneath the man is a powerful. Well, Oscar Wilde, anything you read about him or by him, especially his children's stories. Have you ever read any of his children's stories?
I don't remember.
Oh, they're wonderful.
Well, there's a little plug for Oscar Wilde. The other idea I have about, what's the catch? It's like you dropped into this life and it has all the possibilities of just endless, expansive existence. And the little baby comes in and goes as it peeks through that little opening window from the mother's body, and it goes, "What's the catch?"
And it soon finds out. I don't know why I was thinking of accidents when you were talking about the catch, because it's not really an accident, but a lot of people's catches are the accident. You know, the thing that happens and that's the catch. You know, that's for the payment. They've had a good life and then there's this thing happens and that's the catch. And I was thinking, were accidents never to happen, we would never move. The accident, the random gathering of energy to produce something unexpected. And if it doesn't kill you, it will wake you up.
That was really good.
Have fun.
Yeah. My thought, what you're about to say, if it doesn't kill you, it'll make you stronger. That's the term I've heard, but that's another way of putting it.
It will wake you up. And that's the truth. It does wake you up. Think of the many accidents, those things where you slip, you didn't see where you were going, and months afterwards, you pay such careful attention to the terrain. And that one time you stop paying attention, you trip again.
I have to tell you the story that happened today. So here I was this morning working on coming up with this title, What's the Catch? Okay, today here at Lupin, where we live, we have a restaurant. And today was like the deep cleaning day. That's the day you go after the grease that was there, you know, hiding from you for several months. Back behind in the corners of the stove and just all the places where the grease, and, you know, we don't have as much staff that would clean it as often as it probably deserves. We're so, like, appreciative of this opportunity to clean it. So today I said to the woman who's in charge of the kitchen that I wanted to bring in my steam cleaner. And she said, "No, you don't need the steam cleaner because we got this other guy coming in with this heavy-duty cleaner." But I really wanted to bring in the steam cleaner. So in the meantime, the other guy was putting all the chairs on the tables to get it ready for the floors to be deeply cleaned. I went and I snuck off and I got my steam cleaner because I didn't want her to see me coming in. And I thought, well, if she wants to report me, she can say, "Well, Harold tried to bring in his steam cleaner to steam the grease." Okay, that would be okay because I felt good about that. So I got in there and she was in front of one door. And so I went around the other way and I went into the dining room and the chairs were all on the tables and I couldn't get through the dining room to get back into the kitchen. So I went underneath the table and I grabbed one of the chairs. Domino effect happened. Two dozen chairs all hit the ground in a row. And it was like, huh, what's the catch? I know I took a long time to get there.
But what's the catch?
The catch, here's the catch, is the irony. See, the irony was the catch because I was trying to sneak in, right? So because she didn't want me to go get the steamer, but I really wanted to get it. So here I am in my efforts to sneak in, crawling under the table.
You made just a spectacle of yourself.
Totally, you know, mm-hmm. Totally. But then the other irony was that I started using the steamer, and before you know it, she was saying, "Could you use the steamer over here on this part here?" And it was like it completely turned around. All expectation, planning, fact was all a catch. We got caught in the act, actually.
Who got caught in the act, exactly? Oh, you're such a silly man, Errol Strider.
Well, what can I tell you? You know, we have a catch and release program for the ego that we want to talk to you about.
Catch and release?
Yeah, before that, let's just listen to this song by Matt Simons.
There's a place I go to when no one knows me. It's not long. It's a necessary thing. It's a place I made up. Found out what I made up. The nights I stayed up. Counting stars and fighting sleep. Let it wash over me. I'm ready to lose my feet. Take me off to the place where one reviews life's mystery. Steady on down the line. Lose every sense of time. Take it all in and wake up. That's my part. Day to day, I'm blind to see and find how far to go. Everybody got the reason, everybody got the way. We're just catching and releasing what builds up throughout the day. It gets into your body and it flows right through your blood. We can tell each other secrets and remember how to love. Da da dum da dum dum dum. Da dum dum dum. Da dum dum. Da da dum da dum dum dum. Da dum dum dum. Da dum dum. Over me, I'm ready to lose my feet. Take me off to the place where one reveals life's mystery. Steady on down the line, lose every sense of time. Take it all in, wake up that small part of me. Day to day, I'm blind to see and find how far to go. Everybody got the reason, everybody got the way. We're just catching and releasing what builds up throughout. Day. It gets into your body, flows right through your blood. We can tell each other secrets and remember how to love. Da da dum da dum dum dum. Da dum dum dum.
My vision is clogged like oily pores, cut off from rapture and original light. The buildings are just too high around me. They won't even let me see the smog. My vision got lost in a full auditorium, somewhere between two frames that melted with passion. My vision started crying finally in frustration. It got lost in the shadows, and I can't get it to come back out. Just a little side note.
That's depressing.
It is kind of depressing. Well, I notice as I go through these poems of mine that kind of half of them are depressing. And there's the other half are like really positive, nigh on at least attempting to be spiritual. I don't mean be spiritual. I mean in the sense to allow the writing to touch into the dimension of reality that is forever constant and forever expansive and forever filling up life with more life and supporting that life and allowing existence to become more and more diversified and for integration to take place at more and more complex and various levels of universe abundant reality. That.
I totally understand that in terms of my own life, because there's this sense that I have to constantly get out of the way. It's like I'm in a crowded street. I'm trying to get to the train. Mm-hmm. And all these people are in front of me, and I have to maneuver my way around them because I'm not going to knock them over, you know, and I'm maneuvering my way through them so that I don't get hurt and I don't hurt anybody to get to this place. I find myself doing that a lot, you know, sometimes like my desire to do something or be somewhere at a certain time gets in the way. I'm the crowded street, my own crowded street, trying to block my way to my intention. I watch myself do that and it's puzzling, but then I think I'm aware of it. And therefore, I'm not resisting the fact that it's happening. And I know that shortly, the distance between doing it and becoming aware of it will get shorter and shorter till I know about it before it happens.
You reminded me that they had that old law about the shortest distance between two points is a straight line.
The old one.
Right.
What does replace it?
Well, they're replacing it with the curve. It's about 7 degrees curves, and it goes up and it comes down. Once they realized space was warped, like my mind.
You feel good about that, didn't you? It was, oh my God, they finally recognized me. I are one.
Yeah, exactly. Here's a thought that really struck me. I've talked a lot on this program about the keys of Yeshua and the perspectives of reality that I'm getting from those books, and also the one about love. Anyway, he says, you bring your own space into reality. It's not like yours, like somewhere else and enter space. It's like you create the very space that you occupy, and that's what you add to universe existence. And therefore, your space is always there. I think the decision we make, and here's the catch, is do you choose to be fully in your space, to occupy your space?
How can you be anything less?
That's the illusion. Anything that the ego creates that is like somewhere else then, that's the illusion of projection into the past future. That's precisely the point. You can't be anywhere else, which is why all that stuff is...
Especially if it's space.
Right.
I mean, you can't be in any other space than the space you're in. You can be in a headspace.
That's what I'm talking about. That's the choice. You can be in your space or you can be in your headspace.
Right.
That's good. All right. You got that out there? Are you listening? You can be in your own space or you can be in your headspace.
And I think when you're in your own space, your head becomes aware of your space, and then you're congruent. Your head becomes aware of your space, and then you're congruent.
So you bring your consciousness fully to the space that you're in. Another way of saying that is fully into present time and focus and be aware. Like sometimes when I'm working, I'll catch myself. I'm at the cheese slicer, for example, and I'm slicing up the cheese or the turkey, and I'll notice my shoulders tense up and erase them, and I'm going harder than I need to move the thing and putting more pressure, and I catch myself. I get back in my body to see what it's really wanting me to do at the cheese slicer. We've been having meetings at the cheese slicer, me and the cheese slicer advocates. And we had a meeting last week discussing...
The Zen of cheese slicing.
Well, we were talking to the cheese slicer itself. We asked the cheese slicer, which cheese do you prefer slicing? And the cheese slicer said, "Nep, yeah, the Swiss. Better than... Yep, cheddar. But better than pepper jack."
Cheese slicer, when the first time I ever sliced cheese on a cheese slicer, it seemed to like cheeses that were not too soft and not too hard, because then it crumbled. They had to be just right.
That's right. The other day I mistakenly grabbed a Velveeta-like cheese instead of like the...
Right.
And I stuck it in the cheese slicer.
All of
a sudden it was like paste all over the cheese slicer.
Exactly,
it was like all over it, actually.
Right. They have these special things that they look like a thin piece of metal dental floss. You move that through those soft cheeses.
Well, that's something else. I'm talking about electric.
I know. I'm saying the cheese slicer doesn't work, the electric work around those cheeses. What is needed for those cheeses is this particular kind of cheese slicer that isn't electric.
You heard it here. We're advertising those particular kind of cheese slicers. We don't know what they're called.
Well, it's like a wire.
No,
like
I understand.
Really,
it's got a little round roller underneath it, and it kind of rolls on the cheese, and the wire cuts it.
Yeah.
Get one today. And you know what you can do? You can put that on your Go Raw crackers, like the pizza crackers.
Ooh.
I think it'd taste so good.
I'll bet it
would.
Yeah,
so good. Let's try it. We'll let you know. So what's the catch? What else do you know about the catch? Oh, we're going to talk about the catch and release program of the ego. Now, the way it works is this. Your ego's like always trying to run the ship and take charge and has the point of view, and it's comparing and it's judging and it's evaluating and it's putting out some image of what it thinks it is, and it's throwing the past onto present and relating to that present moment through all those pictures of the past, which it's superimposing on the present and then projecting it into the future. As if it knew what the future could possibly be, and it's always comparing. That's how you know if you're an ego. Or if you find yourself, as I do, I may be doing it now, probably am. The ego turns situations into forms of praise for itself in order to overcome its doubts. I mentioned this last week. That's mm-hmm. from A Course in Miracles. Indeed, it does. So then the question again, and here's the catch, it's the doubt. That's the catch. The Arantxa book says the believer's only battle is the battle against doubt, unbelief. So when you think about belief, from that point of view, it's not like some mental thing, I believe in God or this and that. No, it's, if you think of the word belief, it's be-live. Be-live. So put your being into the life that you're experiencing with no, without all that projection and comparison and trying to lay the past on it. Drop it. You catch yourself doing that, and you catch that little ego almost like catching a ball, and then you release it. Like you just toss it. You release it. And then next time you'll catch the ego at its little shenanigans. That's like a little ball. And you'll just catch it and then just release it. And that becomes a practice until we get so quick that we're just going catch and release, catch and release, catch and release until it just really.
Anymore.
No.
It's like I said, you catch it before it even gets there.
Right. Where'd it go?
I think that becoming aware is probably the most important thing of all in terms of growth. And as I said, they're the accidents that happen, you know, like they wake you up to the moment you make a choice. And for me, of course, the ultimate choice, and I say ultimate in the sense that it's the choice of all choices, let's put it that way, which is the choice to live in total union or in love and all that that means, which I could go into, but I'm not.
Well, we will. But one thing I'm grateful for, I don't know where you are. I thought winter was over, but it turns out that it's lingering, but I think it's come and gone, and so do these folks, and I love the way they sing about it. The name of that song, I could not figure it out. Winter's Come and Gone.
Winter's Come and Gone.
Yeah, Winter's Come and Gone, Kenny and Amanda Smith Band. Hello, Kenny and Amanda Smith.
You find these wonderful people.
I just do. It's just something I have to do. It reminds me of a scene from War and Peace, the great Russian novel by Lev Tolstoy.
Huge book, but marvelous.
That song, you know, it reminds me of those old Russian songs. Well,
Not really.
But there was a scene, this leading character, Prince Andrei, and he's wounded in the war. He's coming back to try and heal, and it's winter, and the trees are barren. Tolstoy writes about that. Of course, I can't do it justice because last time I tried to speak Russian like Tolstoy, it was like really sounded like idiocy. Anyway, and then later on when the spring comes and there's this poignant reference to this tree again, and it's the reminder of resurrection, of life coming forth, even though he dies.
You know, I read that book so long ago that I don't remember.
You read it in the original Russian, didn't you, Rochelle?
Not in the original. I read it in a facsimile of the Russian.
I see. So let's get back to the question at hand. What's the catch?
That seems like a catch when you talk about, like, what happens, you know, as a result of this. This is the catch, but it was a good catch.
Which catch is that?
The catch you talked about just a few minutes ago. Do you remember? I don't either.
I don't know. Well, that's the other
Maybe
thing.
Maybe we'll have to go to the archives and find out what we said.
Right. Okay, we'll meet you there in our archives. That'll be fun. What's the catch?
That's funny.
Yeah.
I was focusing on the infinite and the finite, but the coming back to the catch. The catch is that nobody gets out of this life alive, and that's a big catch to being born.
That's a big catch.
The big catch is you were born and soon you'll die, at least to this body that you know.
That's the catch.
At the same time, you know, like, we don't know what's on the other side of the catch. We don't know what's on the catch up.
Right, the catch up.
I mean, lots of people say they know, and people who believe certain things, they find proof, like somebody actually was up in a spaceship and they come down and therefore spaceships exist. Did you take pictures?
I don't get it. Someone was up in a spaceship.
Yeah, but you have to believe that. And you just like have to believe anything that somebody believes. You know, like they believe in reincarnation. If you believe in reincarnation, I just heard that a six-year-old boy passed something and he said he was that.
Right.
Reading this story in another life. But how do little boys know about other lives? Did he really have another life, or was that something planted in his brain from all the lives he could have chosen and he decided to choose this one and not that one?
We'll never really know, will we?
No, we won't.
I'm uncomfortable with the notion, though, of reincarnation. Now, you have to understand, and I've said this before, that I don't believe in reincarnation, but in a previous life, I did.
I love it. You can say it again and again. I always laugh when you say it. I think it's very funny.
The idea of ongoingness. I wrote my blog this last week about that. I want to share that with you about that ongoingness. And the title of the blog is Don't Take Yes for an Answer. Why is that? Because yes is too short. I mean, it's just like, yes, and you're done. Don't you want an answer with more syllables to it? I do, so it lasts longer. Yes is great, but quite frankly, it's over too soon. Way shorter than an orgasm, even, and that's always a good answer. No, I wouldn't take yes for an answer. Mm-mm. I'd want an answer to be more like, whatever you want. Wouldn't that be a cool answer? Or, you're never wrong. Wow. That's a dynamite answer. Just count the syllables. That alone qualifies it as an answer for the taking. Or you get to decide. Now that's a hell of an answer, ain't it? But if you have a short attention span and can get by on answer snacks, then yes is okay. It'll do in a pinch. But one more thing. The reason not to take yes as an answer is because no answer, no matter how good it is, can be taken. After all, the very best answers aren't taken. They're shared. That's what makes them, well, expert answers.
That's fun. I enjoyed that.
So speaking of expert answers, let's answer a question that you think someone might be asking inside themselves who's acting out in a belligerent or inappropriate or harmful way.
The thing that I'm very aware of is that the things we talked about, having expectations and then they're not fulfilled and you get angry.
Right.
Whatever those expectations are, you know, they each different for every human being. But sometimes there's an underlying rage of not having those expectations fulfilled way back in time when you were little. And then if someone acts like that, it brings up that whole response mechanism. And you're responding to that other person with the rage that you weren't able maybe to respond with when you were little. And yet it upsets you. You didn't get what you wanted. You didn't get affirmation, for one. You probably got a lot of belligerence from the person who probably went through that thing. That's what you pass on to your children sometimes.
To me, I reduced it to one particular phenomenon. That is the catch. That is what you describe. And that's betrayal.
That's a catch.
That's the catch. And I believe that's the catch we all stumble over. That leads us to our varying levels of cynicism, despair, attacking others, being fair, not fair, that whole continuum from the highest level of altruism or mutual loving and caringness all the way around to the other end of really ugly relationships.
The interesting thing is, like, today I was working in a place that I needed to close the office, close the monetary transactions, put it all together, create a concise ending to the day. And somebody wanted to come into this office at that time, and I chose not to let them. And I believe in, like, being there for people so much, but I had this desire to do something different than that. And I wasn't very nice to that person. And I wasn't nice to the person who then proceeded to say, would you please help this person? Oh, I didn't want to help. It was very interesting to watch myself counteract that which I believe in, which is to be totally connected to another human being. I was not seeing them as people I could serve. I was seeing them only as interruptions, like a barnacle. Was like an irritation under my skin. I believe that's part of our humanness, but I think that it just never goes unchecked. The catch is if you don't catch it.
That's the catch.
If you don't catch it, what happens is you just take it as like, oh, I can do that anytime because I haven't looked at it, I haven't observed it, I haven't paid attention to it. So the catch is to catch it.
One of the things we like to catch is catching up. We generally want to catch up. We like up.
It's about as bad as it could be. Seems everybody's bugging me. Skin is acting weird. I wish that I could grow a beard. Then I could cover up my spots, not play connect the dots. I just wanna disappear. Up, 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 can only go up from here. Up, 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 where the clouds gonna clear. Up, up, there's no way but up from here. Even something as simple as yeah.
about as bad as it could be. Seems everybody's bugging me. Like nothing wants to go my way. And just steaming my day. Nothing's coming easily. Oh, 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 oh. And up, up, up. Can only go up from here. Up, up, up. Where the clouds gonna clear. Up, up. There's no way but up from here.
Shania Twain.
Oh, yeah?
She's amazing. But I thought that was a great song. Up, up, up. Can only get up, go up from here. So you can catch up. Maybe that's what the master meant when he said the last shall be first and the first shall be last. Yes, that's what I think it is. I think he's saying you can catch up. It's like the turtle. Remember the story of the turtle and the hare? And the hare was like zipping around. And the turtle was like plodding. It looked like plodding to anyone who was watching the turtle. And then what happened then, Rochelle? What happened
next? He was slow but steady. But the hare thought he was so far ahead he could just relax because that little turtle would never get there no matter what he did. But he relaxed a little too well, and the slow and steady turtle came in first.
And the turtle came in first. That was the first turtle winner in that historical race. And speaking of the race, we want to celebrate the human race and affirm its potential throughout going on, but we are going to be going through some troublesome changes. So it would be a very good thing if we got together and community of people who learned how to work and live together in harmony and cooperation and with less and little ego. I think we've established that tonight, and so I think it's time to beginning to make the transition into the next thing after the show.
Do you know that tomorrow is Earth Day, and Earth Day is now celebrated literally all over the earth? I mean, it started, it was celebrated in a small place in the United States, but it has moved out to where it belongs. To all us earthlings have to realize this is our home, and we have to take care of it. Every inch of it belongs to us. The ground under our being, if it's finite, has to be maintained. If it's infinite, we haven't gotten there yet, but the thing is that we have to maintain everything that is finite if we want it to work. And we want this planet to keep providing us with the food it's capable of and the air that it's capable of and the water that's capable of. We have to partnership with it. I don't think it can happen as we keep polluting. We have to realize that we have to contribute to the health of this planet.
Yeah, but what's the catch?
The catch is we're human and we're immature and we don't know anything about it.
That being said, we're going to sign off. But remember,
resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more. Good night.
You heard it here. Inside Out, The Naked Truth.